Okay, so pretty much most people were here the last 2 weeks. So what we're going to do is we're going to, well, I'll have a little centering meditation, then we're going to jump in. We've got rather a difficult transition to make for the mind. So we've worked the last 2 weeks without even reading a paragraph. The last 2 weeks, we're working on evil, okay? The idea that you come here, spiritual meeting, okay, want to hear all this good news? But the fact is, A Course in Miracles says you don't need to learn a thing about love, because you are love. It's the last thing you need to know is about actually you. See, because it sounds hard, but it's, or sounds simple, but it's really quite hard. You are you, but you've blocked your knowledge that you are you, and you've made a substitute instead. A substitute for what? A substitute for you. You've actually successfully made a substitute for yourself. So the Course in Miracles, you see a lowercase s for self now, or ego. The ego is now a complete, perfectly designed substitute for your large S self. You've become fantasizing so much. You're believing in your own fantasy that you are a separate body stuck on a planet, breathing in air only long enough to push it right back out again, and then you're going to need some more a little later. This has become your reality. Now, it's an adventure, and there's nothing wrong with it, and there's no sin involved. The only mistake is that this would be your reality, that this would actually be true, that you are indeed a body. This is the only thing we need to correct. It's the only thing. From that flows all this wisdom that you yourself would write your own book about. It's this one correction. And from that flows all the wisdom. We're deeply, deeply drunk on the idea of existing as a separate individual in competition with everything else. Where is your meal going to come from? 10 days from now, dinner time. There's a little question mark in most of our minds. Well, because we're in competition with that too, to survive. It's so immediate. It's such a reminder constantly. So, the world will present such contrasts, and one of them is just the idea that there is good and evil. That there's, you know, good, and then there's not good, and the not good has power. As we worked on last week, is the idea, is it true that there are two powers? Goodness and evil. Or some other power that's not good. That's in competition with good. And can beat good from time to time. It's a really personal question. It's a really serious personal question. It's what we worked on last week. Like I said, you know.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because if you look at love and spell it backwards, you get evil.
Yeah, right. Yes. If you take live and spell it backwards, you get evil as well. Yeah. No, but everybody came here with the idea that there's good. How can I harness more good? Can I think more good? Know more good? Can I disqualify that? Disqualify evil as a power? You know, pretty big. These are huge questions. These are massive questions that I just don't hear discussed. But we are going to dig into this with Course in Miracles over and over again. And so, just, you know, with that in mind, because this is a real personal challenge for you, and A Course in Miracles knows that you really think this is a problem. You really do. You really think death is coming. And when it arrives, it's going to take It knows you think this is so true. Doesn't even kid about it. It's pretty curt sometimes when it says things like, there is no death. How could you say that? It doesn't say it on page one. But it does say that nothing real can be threatened on page one. Nothing real can be threatened. Truth is spoken. It also says on page one, as if you needed to hear it, that nothing unreal exists. Would you reach out and give Jesus a dope slap? Nothing unreal exists? What kind of sentence is that? It's of course, if it's unreal, it doesn't, but it's no joking. We are so drunk on actually identifying with the thing in the mirror, with our body. We're so drunk on that. It seems so very, very real. That in fact, we do have to discuss that nothing unreal exists. And we do have to discuss, well, what does it mean, real and unreal? We actually have to stop and break that concept open. Mm-hmm. And one of them is there in fact good and evil equally powerful? You have to break it open. Last week we really did great. We got into talking about the witness. We had a really challenge about how do you know something is good? How do you know good is worth fighting for in your life? Or shouldn't you just succumb to the worst since it's been so powerful all along and just run from it? Or should you actually use your mind and see through it and stop running? You know, we had people saying, well, I know that good is there because I can feel it when I touch it. So in fact, you know, this Course in Miracles says, turns out you are free. You keep doing and saying things to yourself that make you think and feel you're not free. But you are free. And so we're here to work on our own self-empowerment. And of course, one of the things we have to do is we have to witness the job. Yes?
So being a witness, like if you take a step back and watch it like a movie.
Yeah.
I mean, is that where all the miracle popcorn comes in?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's right. So welcome to A Course in Miracles. Everybody take a deep breath. I'm just going to center. And if you would please, for the next couple of minutes, sort of sit up a little bit. Sort of get off your back a little bit. And you'll notice a little change in your body when you do this. You sort of balance your head on your shoulders instead of leaning back, and you get your shoulders over your hips a little bit. A little bit of alignment goes on there. Less of your body is in contact with the earth. And you lean off the back of your chair. You sit up a little bit. You are calling your body to attention. You are calling your body, this very personal aspect of your experience, you're calling it to attention and to serve you. If you're leaning back and making the body super comfortable, then you're serving the body. This is a little itty-bitty reminder of who's really in charge. When you tell the body to sit up and wait for me, sit up and become neutral, body, this is what you will do for just a few moments here. Witness what is really in charge. Is it not your choice that's in charge here. Focus your attention now on what you're sitting on, the lower part of your body that's in contact with the pillow or the ground or the chair. And let the energy from your body drain down to that interface, to that chair, that floor, that pillow. And just let that energy, any kind of heaviness, let it go right there at that interface and let it just slip off into the floor, into the chair, into the pillow. Let the heaviness of that, of your whole body, of any pains that you have, of any discomfort, let it all go right to that interface where you're touching the pillow or chair or the floor. And just feel it drain out like the water out of the bottom of the shower. And as you breathe, imagine that air coming in and sort of sweeping through your body and pressing down, pressing through your flesh, and pressing any heaviness and darkness right down through the floor. Right through that interface. Each breath. Feel any heaviness, any darkness, any sadness. Just feel it drain down through the floor. Just like the shower water. Down the shower drain. Kind of rushes into that hole and down it goes and away. The body is to serve you. It will gladly do so. It's got nothing else in mind. It doesn't have a mind. Call your body to attention for a moment. See how eager it responds and how quickly. Seek no further than your own mind. The way out is the way in. The way up is the way in. Okay, please turn to page 404 in the text. Page 404 in the text. And Connie, I'm not sure which version you have there, but the page numbers start over three times. It's three or four volumes pressed in one book. So this is the first time it says 404. Okay. David, you ready? One paragraph each, 404, rock it. Let's read this section.
Okay. The attraction of guilt is found in sin, not error. Sin will be repeated because of this attraction. Fear can become so acute that the sin is denied the acting out. But while the guilt remains attractive, the mind will suffer and not let go of the idea of sin. For guilt still calls to it, and the mind hears it and yearns for it, making itself a willing captive to its sick appeal. Sin is an idea of evil that cannot be corrected, and yet will be forever desirable. And as an essential part of what the ego thinks you are, he will always want it, and only an avenger with a mind unlike your own could stomp it out through fear.
Oh, should we do names?
David?
Pam.
Jeff?
Julie.
Mario.
Julie. Con.
Wolf.
Frog.
Carol. Donna. Chris.
Mark.
Andrew. Okay.
The ego does not think it possible that love, not fear, is really called upon by sin and always answers. For the ego brings sin to fear, demanding punishment. Yet punishment is but another form of guilt's protection, for what is deserving punishment must have been really done. Punishment is always the great preserver of sin, treating it with respect and honoring it its enormity. What must be punished must be true, and what is true must be eternal and will be repeated endlessly. For what you think is real, you want and will not let it go.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. An error, on the other hand, is not attractive. What you see clearly as a mistake, what you want corrected.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes a sin can be repeated over and over with obviously distressing results, but without the loss of its appeal. And suddenly you change its status from sin to a mistake. Now you will not repeat it. You will merely stop and let it go. Unless the guilt remains, from then you will but change the form of sin, granting that it was an error, but keeping it uncorrectable.
Mm-hmm.
This is not really a change in your perception, for it is sin that calls for punishment, not error.
Mm-hmm.
The Holy Spirit cannot punish sin. Mistake he recognizes and would correct them all as God entrusted him to do. But sin he knows not, nor can he recognize mistakes that cannot be corrected. For a mistake that cannot be corrected is meaningless to him. Mistakes are for correction, and they call for nothing else. What calls for punishment must be calling for nothing. Every mistake must be a call for love. What then is sin? What could it be but a mistake you would keep hidden? A call for help that you would keep unheard and thus unanswered.
In time, the Holy Spirit clearly sees the Son of God can make mistakes. On this, you share his vision, yet you do not share his recognition of the difference between time and eternity. And when correction is completed, time is eternity. The Holy Spirit can teach you how to look on time differently and see beyond it, but not while you believe in sin. In error, yes, for this can be corrected by the mind. But sin is a belief that your perception is unchangeable, and that the mind must accept as true what it is told through it. If it does not obey, the mind is judged insane. The only power that could change perception is thus kept impotent, held to the body by the fear of changed perception, which its teacher, who is one with it, would bring.
When you are tempted to believe that sin is real, remember this. If sin is real, both God and you are not. If creation is extension, the Creator must have extended himself, and it is impossible that what is part of him is totally unlike the rest. If sin is real, God must be at war with himself. He must be split and torn between good and evil, partly sane and partially insane. For he must have created what wills to destroy him and has the power to do so. Is it not easier to believe that you have been mistaken than to believe in this?
While you believe that your reality or your brother's is bounded by a body, you will believe in sin. While you believe that bodies can unite, you will find guilt attractive and believe that sin is precious. For the belief that bodies limit mind leads to a perception of the world in which the proof of separation seems to be everywhere, and God and his creation seem to be split apart and overthrown. For sin would prove what God created holy could not prevail against it, nor remain itself before the power of sin. Sin is perceived as mightier than God, before which God himself must bow and offer his creation to its conqueror. Is this humility or madness?
Mm-hmm.
If sin is real, it must forever be beyond the hope of healing. For there would be a power beyond God's capable of making another will that could attack his will and overcome it and give his son a will apart from his and stronger. And each part of God's fragmented creation would have a different will opposed to his and in eternal opposition to him and each other. Your holy relationship has, as its purpose now, the goal of proving this is impossible. Heaven has smiled upon it, and the belief in sin has been uprooted in its smile of love. You see it still because you do not realize that its foundation is gone. Its source has been removed, and so it can be cherished but a little while before it vanishes. Only the habit of looking for it still remains.
And yet you look with heaven's smile upon your lips and heaven's blessings on your sight. You will not see sin long, for in the new perception the mind corrects it when it seems to be seen, and it becomes invisible. Errors are not quickly recognized. Errors are quickly recognized and quickly given to correction, to be healed, not hidden. You will be healed of sin and all its ravages the instant that you give it no power over your brother, and you will help him overcome mistakes by joyously releasing him from the belief in sin.
Mm-hmm. Is that beautiful? Mm-hmm. Isn't that a miracle in progress? It just describes what happens when the miracle's in place, that you no longer see it the same, so you don't enforce what you used to see. Your mind's corrected. A lot easier. Mm-hmm. More pleasant. Let's continue.
In the holy instant, you will see the smile of heaven shining on both you and your brother, and you will shine upon him in glad acknowledgement of the grace that has been given you. For sin will not prevail against a union heaven has smiled upon. Your perception has healed in the holy instant heaven gave you. Forget what you have seen and raise your eyes in faith to what you now can see. The barriers to heaven will disappear before your holy sight, and for you who were sightless have been given vision and you can see. Look not for what has been removed, but for the glory that has been restored for you to see.
Look upon your Redeemer and behold what he would show you in your brother. And let not sin arise again to blind your eyes, for sin would keep you separate from him, but your Redeemer would have you look upon your brother as yourself. Your relationship is now a temple of healing, a place where all the weary ones can come and rest. Here is the rest that waits for all after the journey. It is brought nearer to all by your relationship. Okay, back to page 404, paragraph 1, section title, The Unreality of Sin. Sentence 1, the attraction of guilt is found in sin, not error. Attraction to guilt. Who wants to be guilty? Not me.
Is it possible that guilt's kind of like a reflection of feeling worthy? Like, you know, like the Taoist kind of the opposites approach, like to have guilt. But to have a worthy feeling, you have to have guilt.
Like super humility?
Okay, I don't know. But I'm just saying, like, the fact that we cling on to guilt suggests that there's maybe... It's just part of the duality of the universe. You know?
That it is. That it is. In fact...
And sin's just like the trigger or whatever.
Holding on to guilt is part of this universe that really helps you feel good.
It gives you... Yeah. You got to have a bad to feel good.
It's it helps you justify the punishment that you're going to have to meet after that SOB who did that to you.
Okay, so basically this is an anger management class.
Yes. Absolutely.
No, because that's where I'm finding this, because I'll tell you, I stood up to this course. I mean, the anger management course, I took it.
Yeah, good.
And I just took it because I needed it
good.
To stop my thing that was happening with, remember that prodigal son I had?
Yep.
Well, I stood up to him.
Yeah.
Took a step back. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Dialed 911.
Mm-hmm.
And how I dialed 911 is that I didn't have to feel guilty anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway.
Yeah, boy, it's just like a big wet wool blanket, this guilt.
Exactly.
It blocks us from moving freely.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. And I saw, you know, by taking that class, I was just looking at this whole, identified the whole class, my anger, my this and that. But once I identified with it,
mm-hmm.
oh my God, mm-hmm. I was free.
Yep.
Died 911. Almost died 411.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, but it was good because the thing is, I'm free from it. Mm-hmm. And I'm released from it because, you know, I was just being abused the whole time.
Uh-huh.
And,
by you.
Exactly.
Abused by you.
And it was just something that, you know, I'm just identifying it with the anger.
Uh-huh.
With the sin.
Yep.
With
good.
This, you know, so anyway, just wanted to
good.
Show that.
Good. Right on, Mario.
Yeah, no. Hey, it was a real class.
Yeah, thank you.
But, you know, hopefully he wakes up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's a prodigal son story I heard.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be a party.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's really it, isn't it? We abuse ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes. So the thought, you see, chief law of love. I mean, how bold is this book? It says there's a law of love. Oh my God! All those songs and poems and movies trying to describe love. This book says, look, there's a law of love, which the same book describes as the law of mind, which the same book described as the law of spirit. So what we're talking about is an ultimate truth that's so simple that it defies being believed, and yet we witness it, and that is this. As you give, you receive. It's when you give, that's when you receive. What are we talking about? Well, love, loving thoughts, kindness, patience. You give patience. In the moment you decide to be patient, you start feeling patient. It's amazing how that is. Unless you're lying to yourself, then you're not being patient, see? The moment you decide to be kind, you suddenly feel kind. You feel kind. The moment you feel fear, you suddenly feel fearful. As you give the fear thoughts into your consciousness, you get the fear thoughts first, and sometimes nobody even knows. As you feel abused, you get abused immediately. This becomes your reality. Nobody else would have just the right words or pictures. It would all be quite off a little bit if they tried to make you feel fearful or abused. But you, on the other hand, instantly, because of you being you, because you have all your own buttons ready to press at your fingertips, because of how close you are to you being, you are your own worst enemy. Oh, there's nobody better to hurt you than you. Isn't that also the good news? Isn't that also the good news? If we could catch ourselves, if we could just see how that works, that it's our own finger that's going right to the fear button, right to the abused button that keeps stimulating it. Put your hand down, take a breath, call your body to attention and say, I release that. I release that stinking thinking. I release that behavior. Let me come into the present moment and be free. Just for an instant. Try it. If it doesn't work, your misery will be instantly refunded. But if it does work, you will be free. Even if only just for a moment. It's too simple to be believed. That's why we have so many words and so many lessons. And of course, you know, it's a super powerful lessons approaching this.
Yeah, I love it because, you know, like I was saying, that concept, you know, when you get there to that.
Yep.
And when you step into that belief 100%, 99%.
Yep.
The popcorn's free.
Yep.
You know, I'm just kind of like, I'm finding that door, but I'm trying to find the lock to lock it. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's just like any addiction, Mario. It's really absolutely no different. That's why I kind of like to think of this as Ego's Anonymous. Mm. We all come here in direct admission that our ego's running our life, and we'd rather not. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get angry again. I don't want to be fearful again. I don't want to have that worthless feeling I'm feeling as a teenager. Whatever it is you got, if you start to get the idea that's quite unnecessary, in fact, life could be really cool and big and spacious if it wasn't you getting in your own way every day. Let's bust that ego. That's exactly what we're doing. And that's why we pulled some pretty tough topics these last 2 weeks with the idea of ego and sin and two powers. And now, just to continue our trifecta of hard to think about things, we're going to talk about guilt. These are what the Course talks about on page 1 as the blocks to the awareness of love's presence. As Chris just pointed out, oh, I'm doing this. When I think about it, then I get it again. Receive it again. I'm blocking my own awareness. I'm blocking my own freedom by thinking not free thoughts. Worry thoughts, smallness thoughts, fear thoughts. And then you will live that. You have to live that because you're receiving what you're painting. You have to. Get what you give. It's a direct experience. Of course. Now, for this book has given me permission to stop that. Mm. I used to think it was like being a good thinker, responsible, and why don't I chase my guilt feelings all the way to the source, see? And then I could undo it back there in the past. And then magically, like dominoes, all of my, 10 years of thinking about this problem will magically just be ineffectual here in the present. If I can go to the past and fight the right thing to undo. And of course says, well, that's one way. The other way is, there is no past. You've been dreaming that up entirely. Even in the past, when you were thinking about your present, you were actually coloring it from your past, see? So you didn't see this episode that happened 16 years ago as it actually was then, and you certainly, this time later, don't see it as it is now. So rather than fishing in the past, let's look at how, right now, in this moment, before your next thought comes, you're contributing to the tightness, the contraction, or unhappiness, or block. Let's look at how you're doing that. Forget the why. And it turns out that that's a real shortcut. Now, it's a steep shortcut, and a lot of people can't climb it. So they go the long way around. Do a lot of therapy and go, deal with issues and stuff. And all that eventually works. It all eventually works. Of Course in Miracles says, because of the power of your mind, you can call that awakening into this present moment. Because there actually is no past. I think you're ready to hear this. And we are in the Western world. Eastern world's been thinking about this for a long time. But still, it's a very, very scary thought. Even in these high-end Eastern religions, these developed Eastern religions. So there's lots of ways to smooth out the message. Of course, it's quite, I was going to say rude. What's another word for harsh? Abrupt. Course is direct. Course in Miracles, it would be such a bigger book if it tried to soften the message any more than it already has. But it's really got a huge message to deliver to your mind, and it thinks you're ready for it. If you're holding the book, you probably are. You're probably done with these other long, slow climbs that are so easy to fall off of and wander off. Of course, you will not fall off of and wander off slowly. You will fall off hard and throw the book down and say, this is crap. I can't even understand it. That's how the Course goes. The other things will go after 2 or 3 years. You're saying, oh, I've been practicing this and nothing's really happening. I go and I listen and I read the books and it's not really working for me after a long time. Of Course is really not that way. You will reject it. You spend some time with it. If it's not for you, you'll just have to reject it because it's just absolutely foreign.
Right.
But for those for whom this book is written, You feel it.
Thank
Even
you.
Though you don't quite get necessarily the words, and you would sure write it differently.
But I was just explaining to him that just 33 days ago,
yep,
I started my lesson plans.
Ah, good.
And I've been coming here for a while.
Yep.
Not that I finally got it. It's just that, wait a minute. I need a lesson. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, it took him by the hand.
Yes.
And
have you found anything, anywhere, that will come out and take you by the hand, day by day, hour by hour, and some days when you need it? It's even, minute by minute, down to what is, I think it's 6 minutes, is about as tight as it gets. For what to do, what to say, to whom and when, and what to be thinking. I've never seen anything that comes in that walks with me that close than this book. Mm-hmm. But then, like I said, this is pretty radical stuff. Having a guide to go through a shortcut, a steep path, is just about required. Otherwise, it would be the freeway, and everybody would take it. And there are much more gentle ways than A Course in Miracles to make yourself, you know, give you a better day. A Course in Miracles says, I don't care about your day. I care about your identity. The day will take care of itself when you get that straight. But what about my spouse? What about the money? What about the person who keeps yelling at me at work? What about, right? Different path. All those things. Certainly you can make a better day.
Yeah.
This is making a better, awakening to your being. So that's why we get some of this pretty rough stuff, like we're about to hit right here. So the attraction of guilt is found in sin, not error. And as we've just read, you recognize that, and we've talked about in these previous weeks, anytime you see the word sin in A Course in Miracles, since it says there is no sin, what's it really talking about?
Mistakes.
Separation, yeah. And the mistake, the idea of separation, is real. So sin is a mistake. It's anything you think is a sin is actually a mistake. There are no such thing as sins. What's sin supposed to be? It's supposed to be an unforgivable mistake. There's something that went wrong that you can't fix. You don't deserve to fix it. In fact, you should be punished for it. That's what sin's supposed to be. Of course, it's, oh my God, don't you realize that you're in the middle of your own dream? See? So the idea that you should be punished for something that you just dreamed up and thought real and are trying to enforce is a joke. So as soon as you think you can, get off that. Stop it. Go into the present moment. Call it a miracle, which is, shift the way you're seeing it. Do a little forgiveness to release it. Take a breath in the present moment and go, wow, what a trip I just let go of.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to do that any longer. And heal your mind. And then start to breathe joy.
I've been drinking with my ego lately.
Yeah, okay.
And it hasn't been nice. It wasn't there to take me home.
Yeah. The ego's not interested in your freedom. It's interested in your guilt. The ego, if it's chosen to be your friend, okay, if it's chosen to follow it, the ego only knows and is sure of what it does not want.
Hmm.
Right? Then we see that sentence?
366,
actually.
Oh,
but that's
boy.
Right.
That's the section.
That's the right section. Everybody flipped this page 366. I just want you to see this amazing little...
Could you say the chapter? Because I have a different book.
Oh, yeah. Well, pick up one of the other books. Unless you're writing notes and stuff.
Right.
Yeah, just grab one of the... So, I think we should really just look at page 366. Let's just read three paragraphs here. I mean, this busts your friend, Mario, your drinking buddy. It busts it as a guide, I think, quite quickly and deftly here. And I want you to recall that this is chapter 17. This is where we're breaking you out of your special relationship. We're really talking about, pretty particular. This is like... person to person, usually. You know, in this chapter 16 is your special relationship. Somebody you went to find happiness, and maybe they let you down a little bit. Maybe you found yourself in competition with somebody for whom you just said, and you heard them say, I love you. He says, Course in Miracles says, look, you've got a great miracle waiting to happen. We'll go from special relationship, where that competition is, to holy relationship, where true union is possible. That's what we're talking about right here as we talk about this aspect of the ego. Who's up to read? Anybody remember? David is?
David.
Great. David, will you start us on page 366, paragraph 2.
366. In any situation in which you are uncertain, the first thing to consider very simply is, what do I want to come of this? What is it for? The clarification of a goal belongs at the beginning, for it is this which will determine the outcome. In the ego's procedure, this is reversed. The situation becomes the determiner of the outcome, which can be anything. The reason for this disorganized approach is evident. The ego does not know what it wants to come of the situation. It is aware of what it does not want, but only that. It has no positive goal at all.
Your drinking buddy Mario has no positive goal at all. It just knows what it doesn't want.
Yep.
And that's kind of a nagging, negative experience.
Yeah.
Ego. Welcome to ego. There is a better way. You are a creator. You were meant to sing and dance and make colors. Not sit in the dark. So there is a better way. Yeah.
Can I speak to the... You were just talking about interrupting a moment, like, to have a miracle.
Yes.
But, I wanted to speak to, like, the importance of daily practice, because in 3 years of doing this book and meditating almost every day, what I'm finding is that I guess it goes to more towards the universal application that... The things that happen, the shit that happens in my life just doesn't... there's not even as much of a reaction to it anymore. So it is easier to pause and take a breath and have that reset. But it's almost like... by doing daily practice and not fixating on, like, if I do this, it'll fix that, it's like you're just going to do the practice and the lessons or whatever it is. And then, I don't know, everything, it's hard to describe because it just starts to flow. Like, it's not, when I first, and believe me, Andrew knows, like, I would bring very specific problems and be like, but what am I supposed to do with this? And now it's like after 3 years, and I still have a long journey ahead of me, but I can apply it in specific situations, but because of my daily practice,
yes.
Like there aren't as many situations that I even like need to pause for, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah, what happens is that, and it's happened with you, is that there has become a part of you now has awoken. That's not in the battle. Julie's still in the battle, and Julie's interest and Julie's future and Julie's tomorrow is still in the battle. But somehow, somewhere along the way, in 3 years, you figured out, wait, this Julie kind of comes and goes. What am I? Mm-hmm. And A Course in Miracles tells you what you are. And it doesn't have a name like Julie. Mm-hmm. It's like, whoa. And so that thought has slowly been seeking in, and that is an awakening. You've actually awoken from Julie. That's what you awakened from. What? From Julie, which is a limited picture of a separated existence that really does lose. Eventually it loses it all. Eventually it will lose even the heartbeat. I mean, it happens to all of them. But there's a part of you that is not. Part of you that actually is able to step above the battleground and see the individual players each trying to get, innocently, their way. Each of them wishing and willing to take from the other. And this Julie character was one of them, equally as the others. And when you homogenize that for the first time, you get that instant above the battleground, now it's just not as personal. Mm. Now you can no longer go as deep and dark as you did before. So congratulations. An awakening has occurred. And you can see it. As the Course beautifully told us, we're back in chapter 14, it says, you have to step out of an insane thought system to see how insane it is. Mm-hmm. Because inside the thought system, all the rules apply. And you go with them.
The reason I share that, though, is not to tout my success, but that when I started this book, it's frustrating to think, like, it's not happening fast enough, or, like, when am I going to tell that it's there? But it's this, it's like this little seeping that happens where, like, I was just thinking the other day, like, I got this new job, and I felt actually ready for it. I've applied twice before and didn't get it. This time I just felt like I was ready, and I thought, like, what did I do to develop that confidence? And then I realized I didn't do anything. It's the exact opposite. Like, I started meditating 3 years ago, and because I have so much more trust, like, that this doesn't matter, I can be more direct, honest, like, I just show up differently. So I used to, like I wanted a really specific thing in the beginning, but if you just commit and trust, like, it'll unfold, you know, it's not...
And then you have to witness an unfolding happening, not through some heroic event, but through a you doing nothing, from Julie actually stepping back and letting this other thing take control a little bit more. Huh, Mario?
Well,
co-pilot,
know,
maybe?
Well, I see, my co-pilot took me home. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to tell you, and I'm being honest, and I'm just, you know, because I'm searching for, you know, I want my relationship with what I seek. And the thing is, you know, I'm like, wait a minute, how many free passes did I get this 6 months? And I'm blaming it on me, of course, but I'm also like, wow, what brought me home? What got me home safe? Okay.
Yeah.
And I'm being honest.
Yeah.
And I'm not just sugarcoating it.
Yeah.
Because it's my honesty that's going to help me figure out what I need to do, in a sense of, hey, are you going to continue that party? You know?
Yep. Well, this trust Julie is talking about develops, but sometimes you only get this trust when you're so sick and tired of trying, and you just don't try for a while. You're like, you know what?
Thank you.
Things are okay. Sometimes that's how you get it. Fine. The lessons are designed to give you a high bottom. You know a bottom, they say? You know a bottom is when you can't go any deeper. It's like so dark. It's like, I'm going to kill myself or else, you know? Of Course in Miracles is designed to get to bring you, to show you the falsity of the troubles you bring yourself. Of how much you are a participant in any difficulties you've ever had. It just shows you with these lessons throughout the day. You bust yourself again and again, and enough times, especially if you're doing the lessons all day long, Mario, now something pops up and you forgot the lesson because you're so busy dealing with the stinking world, and then you actually take time in the quiet corner to go do the lesson again and go, oh, man, and you feel the relief, see? You feel the contrast. You just read words that you've said 50 times so far today, and you forgot them, and the same words now applied allowed your mind to flow back to peace so quickly, you're like, why did I ever leave? This proves the power of your mind in that moment with a real situation that's custom made to ruin your day, now healed your mind, gave you some freedom. That's what a miracle does. That's where forgiveness is called in. The peace that it brings is a one-way trip, and it's called an awakening. It's the practical awakening from what? From your own nightmare that you're dreaming specifically for you to not be in love, to not experience freedom. It's not evil. It's just what you did here in a body is to get away from the freedom of which you have unlimited amount in heaven, you know, or reality. It's not evil. It's just a trip you're taking, but it's over now. It's time to come home. It's time. It's just time.
Yeah.
That's all. No harm done.
Thank you.
And thank you, Julie, because, you know, that is exactly why I hear it again, over and over and over, with people who just have to say, how does this thing work? Sometimes we do that. We'll go around the room and we'll spend the night talking about how does Course in Miracles work for you. That is essentially the story. It says, I'm not really sure how it works, but I know that it works, and I've been watching it work. Mm-hmm. I can't say what page, I can't say what lesson. Mm-hmm. I just know that I'm a freer being now than I was before I started. Mm-hmm. And we did chapter 16, and a woman came up to me afterward, and she grabbed me and says, she's, you know, I think I'd still be married if I had done this before my divorce. I was the problem. I was so angry. I was so... I made things really hard on both of us. She just busted herself. Well, chapter 16 will be that.
What's so great about this, the whole book, that seeps in, takes you by the hand, it takes you all the ways in which you have structured your reality up to this point, and takes you, I mean, never gets tired of guiding you, you know, repeats itself so you can get it in a new way, in a different way. It's just really, it's very good books for the psychological state of this condition we're in.
Yes, and it's not a maybe, it's so authoritative.
Yeah.
It's not a try this.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, here's the truth, do this.
And it's basically a relationship.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. And it's you, right? There's no other.
Yeah.
You're not actually following somebody else, right? This book is not showing you a guru. It's a note from your older brother saying, man, try this for yourself when you're ready if you want freedom. Work for me. And I figured out that you and me are actually the same, so I know it's going to work. It's an amazing walk, this thing. Nothing so authoritative than me. It's just wonderful that way. Okay, let's read the next paragraph. Paragraph 3 of 366. Pam?
Without a clear-cut positive goal set at the outset, the situation just seems to happen and makes no sense until it has already happened.
Do you know what we're talking about here? We're talking about setting the goal before you go into a situation, instead of waiting for the situation to unfold and then decide whether it was good or bad. That's exactly the opposite of the way I grew up.
Mm-hmm.
I was always waited out, see what happens, and then decide whether it was good or bad and whether I won or lost. Of course, how could you know whether you won or lost until the results of scores tallied? Of course, says, man, are you drunk on this world. You don't even recognize your own contribution to your experience. Try this, he says, in this section. It's called setting the goal. He says, you set the goal before you start your discussion, argument, ask for a raise, go through a difficult journey, whatever. Before you go through this thing that you think has got some impact on your life, before you do that, ask, what is this for? You haven't gone through it yet. How could you have just the guts to ask what it's for when you haven't experienced it? That's exactly what we're talking about. We're reversing the whole experience of the way the world unfolds. And we're saying, you choose what it's for before you say it, do it, act it, receive it, pay for it, earn it, etc. Before you decide what it is for. And now, because of the law of mind, you will start to receive as you give that purpose. This is for us to join further. This is to solidify our relationship. This is for me to become more self-empowered. This is actually for me just to be a little more happy in the next 15 minutes.
Do you mind if I give an example?
Yeah, go.
I wasn't sure what they meant by setting the goal, but my recent trip that I took in my new little van, I backed out to travel. I just set the intention of not having a goal in mind other than to be available to whatever presented itself. And it was just incredible. And for one thing, I ended up at a music fair to see the eclipse of the moon. I could not have planned that, you know? It was just I set the intention
just like that.
Of being available
just like
to whatever
that.
Guidance or
just
whatever
like that. My goal is to receive.
I bring that to my life here.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Just like that.
Every moment.
And then the minute you decide that, your whole being and the universe, as it says beautifully in another section of the book, the universe is sort of conspiring to go along with whatever it is you want. And if you start going for the good, because that's in alignment with what with truth is, the universe actually has direct access to your experience now. When you're aligned with good, turns out, there's an empowerment that occurs. This is the drunkenness of enlightenment. That's why we continue to climb this ladder, because once you get a little bit of freedom and you find it's very, very, very internal, mm-hmm. you're like, what more of that is there to be had? Mm-hmm. And enlightenment is an addiction of its own. Yeah, but that's exactly what we're talking about. You set the goal ahead of time without even knowing the how, the what, the who, the, you know, and then immediately you start to receive it. You start to experience it. Even as things go wrong, as the world would judge, because your goal is to receive, you're going to say, how will I be available for this problem? And there you are, available for a flat tire or somebody else's flat tire or whatever goes that nobody wants. But you're there to say how you come right in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. You're not defending, you're not complaining, everybody else is, but you're not. What effect does that have on a group of people who are worried? It's a wonderful experience, really. But it just shows the power of your mind. That's exactly what we're talking about. Thank you. Yes, yes. Okay, let's continue. You can start over.
Without a clear-cut positive goal set at the outset, the situation just seems to happen and makes no sense until it has already happened. Then you look back at it and try to piece together what it must have meant. And you will be wrong. not only is your judgment in the past, but you have no idea what should happen. No goal was set with which to bring the means in line. And now the only judgment left to make it, whether or not the ego likes it, is it acceptable or does it call for vengeance? The absence of a criterion for outcome set in advance makes understanding doubtful and evaluation impossible.
It's kind of chaotic, the Course says. God, you go in a situation and you just wait for it to steer you? I mean, how chaotic is that? You're a creator. You only get what you choose, and you're trying to have something else choose for you. Like the dog gets wagged by the tail. The tail sits still and the dog is flopping around. Hey, that's backwards. Okay, next one.
Can you go?
Yep.
The value of deciding in advance what you want to happen is simply that you'll perceive the situation as a means to make it happen.
Read that again. That's good.
The value of deciding in advance what you want to happen is simply that you will perceive the situation as a means to make it happen.
It'd be a great t-shirt if it wasn't so
bad. I was just thinking the same thing.
You know, right down the front, right?
That's so funny. I was just thinking that.
Nice.
You will therefore make every effort to overlook what interferes with the accomplishment of your objective and concentrate on everything that helps you meet it. It's quite noticeable that this approach has brought you closer to the Holy Spirit sorting out truth and falsity. The truth becomes what can be used to meet the goal. The false becomes useless, which is useless from this point of view. The situation now has meaning, but only because the goal has been made it meaningful.
Yes. So Mario, all that is just to speak about your drinking partner.
Yeah.
You know, drinking the ego.
Yeah.
You know, it's just useless. It actually takes you into chaos. Mm-hmm. When the exact same moments could have spent choosing the freedom that you want at the beginning, or the happiness you want in the beginning, or the peace you want in the beginning, or the receiving that you want at the beginning. And then now it's the way to make it happen. The situation is now serving you, like your body in this meditation was serving you. So you could actually feel your own power. It turns the world around. A good little thing, you know, little things like that is really the proof that will stick with you. Okay, so yeah, this is a great section. Highly recommend it anytime. But now let's get back to work tonight. Page 404. The attraction of guilt is found in sin, not error. Okay. Should we adventure? We have a little time. We're on kind of a reading jag, so let's go for it. Jeff, would you go to page 410? Everybody jump ahead a few pages. And go ahead and let's read a paragraph each, the attraction of guilt.
Starting at 10?
Yeah, starting at 10.
The attraction of guilt. The attraction of guilt produces fear of love, for love would never look at guilt at all. It is this nature of love we look upon only of the truth, for there it sees itself, with which it would unite in holy union and completion. As love must look past fear, so must fear see love not. For love contains the end of guilt, and surely as fear depends on it. Love is attracted only to love. Overlooking guilt completely sees no fear. It sees no fear. Being wholly without attack could not be afraid. Fear is attracted to what love sees not, and each believes what the other looks upon does not exist. Fear looks on guilt, which is the same devotion as love looks on itself. And each has messengers which send forth, which return to it with the messages written in the language of which they're going forth was asked.
Isn't that what we just talked about? Setting the goal? So love sets the goal, and you know this in the first couple weeks of that special relationship, you know? Everything goes right. Oh, you're late? Wow, so something must have really happened to you. Horrible. I'm glad you're okay. After a couple years, you know, you're late, you son of a... Every time, you're wasting my time being so selfish. It's love looks for a reason. Love will get... They'll come up with a beautiful reason for you to be late. You know, I'm glad you were late. It gave me a chance to catch up on my reading. I read the whole newspaper. I never get to do that. You look cute today. Got a new shirt. This is love just looking for happiness, man. And that feels great, right? No grudge, no judgment. Just glad to see you. I'm really glad you made it. I don't even care what happened to you. Just glad you're here. That's love feeling, looking for love. Okay? Now, guilt, on the other hand, I don't even have to go through it. It's obvious. We can just rip you up. Make you feel guilty for wasting my time, and I'm really looking for a sorry. And if you can evoke a little tear when you say, God, I'm so sorry, you know what? We're going to be okay, you and me. I've just got you. I got your power. I got you where I want you. Now I've got a little credit in the bank. I can be late next time. Be all right. Oh my God! Right. So that's the competition of the special relationship, and it actually has a little economy that it runs. You know, that's what we're trying to heal from. You know, we're trying to heal from all that game, like that. What we really want is ask what this is for ahead of time, and then just continue to follow the openness and the receiving every single time. This is for happiness. Okay, that's good enough. If you can't think of anything else, just say happiness. And then your happiness would just be a little higher. Yeah. There's an attraction to guilt. There's an attraction to guilt. If fear is keeping you safe, if you feel fear is powerful and love is maybe is, maybe isn't, but fear is powerful. Danger that I will lose, I do not want to lose. The ego only knows what it does not want. And fear is a great buddy to remind you of what it doesn't want and steer clear of what it does not want. The ego does not have a positive goal at all. So, if you're trusting fear as your guide, it's going to send out messengers and look for problems where you could lose. You're going to be full of, you know, guilt and fear. If it's love, of course, it's a whole different experience, like I described. It's just a wonderful... When you afford love, when you afford to look for love, the love actually doesn't see what fear would see, as this paragraph beautifully says. It's just too simple to say in a few words. This is why we have to have so many words and so many chances of ways to say this until you allow yourself to afford it. And then you're free. You just become more free.
I think with that no positive goal, what's also interesting is the conflicting messages that the ego will give. For example, you know, I'm afraid to move, but I'm afraid to stay. Or, and so it's like you can't, yes. You in one sentence, you can yes. like, you know, should I be in this relationship yes. or should I not? And the ego yes. will actually convince you of both.
Yes.
And so it's like so, yes. it's just really messed up.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah.
Yes. A chaotic guide. It only knows what it does not want. It has no positive goal at all. So it couldn't ever actually tell you what to do. It could only warn you what not to do. Don't leave. All this terrible stuff could happen. Well, don't stay. All this terrible stuff is already happening. Thanks. Well, I need a drink, right, Mario?
Thanks to you.
I mean, that's that, what the Course calls that sick. Mm-hmm. It's sick because that's a great example. Thank you, Julie.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great example of the separation from you. You see, you are love. I'm just going to break it to you gently. You are love. It tells us in prayer, it's chapter 4, it says, look, teach only love because that's what you actually are. And you'll find alignment in that. But there's separation from love when you go for fear. When you start to fall away this fear. You're disconnected from your own being. And you're following this made up one, which is fearful and guilty. And it's made a fantastic world. It's just like horror movies are really fantastic. You know, all the special effects and the sound and the timing and the dark and uses of light and stuff. Horror movies are really, really extreme. They were a good horror movie. Wow, what an experience.
Doesn't do any better than what I can do, though.
Yeah, they're trying with all this resources to come in from the outside, but you on the inside, whoa.
That's only an hour and a half. You got a mini series going on?
I do.
40 years.
Yeah, epic.
Soap opera. Saga.
The saga. Okay, really good. Yes.
Oh, I just wanted to ask. So, I know maybe this is a little off the topic, but I was just thinking because of dealing with a lot of body stuff, the special relationship can be projected onto your body.
Yes.
And then you can play out the whole thing.
Absolutely, Donna. Anything you can think of, you can have a special relationship with. Your own body, your money, your health, your how people think of you. How you think people think of you. You can have a special relationship of the image of you. You can have a special relationship of the image of you.
It's the traditional ego.
The what?
The orthodox ego.
That's what we used to think of the word ego, what we think of ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's called sickness in the Course in Miracles. And it all comes from this idea of sin, which is just, it just means separation in the book. The book just gets right down to it. The only possible thing that would be an unforgivable mistake is if you were not what you are. If you were successful in making yourself different from a child of God. It says, don't worry about it. It's impossible. You're just dreaming up another horror movie. It's an hour and a half of well-paid actors just for the certain effect of nothing. It's nothing. Didn't really happen. Turns out.
But you're really good at projecting it so you get the feedback that you're looking for.
Yes.
I mean, you know, you can make yourself really sick. You can make yourself really unhappy.
Your personal private hell you've architected as you've played with the power of God. Creation.
Yes.
You are a creator. You are an extension of God, and you've decided to make a sleep. And inside the sleep, you've decided to make, now you've got a sleep going, some bad dreams. You've had bad dreams in the sleep, trying to get further from love so you can experience real independence. Mm-hmm. But the price was, you'd have to be independent of the truth, see? The truth is love. And you really, really are love. You really are aligned with love. And when you try not to have love in your life, true love now, even if it's private, you start to get into what's called endarkenment. Endarkenment occurs. And you take steps down and away from simplicity and happiness and alignment. From simple empowerment where your will is in control. Endarkenment is victimhood. But you're going to have to do that if you want to try to see what it's like to not have love. You're going to have to do some victimhood. It's not evil. It's like a horror movie. It's just horrible. But horror movies, a real good horror movie is, wow, what a job. My skin was crawling. Forgot to eat my popcorn. It was so scary. Good one. Right? You did it on purpose. And it's not evil. There's no evil.
You can choose something else.
Choose something else when you're tired of it. I had this breakthrough when I watched, because I'm not a horror movie guy, I'm a happy guy. I want more happiness, please. The more the better. But somehow I watched Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, God.
Oh. Anthony Hopkins.
Accidentally watched it.
Did you?
No, you.
What? I did. I watched.
Accidentally.
Oh, yeah, right. I forget why. I don't even know why. Somebody told me it was great. You have to see it. So, well, all right. And the acting was fantastic, and the story, and it was, whoa. I mean, it was a really good horror movie. This guy was twisted. Sick.
And those are those scary ones that are believable. I mean, it's not like some creature.
That's right. He was so smart. It's that the cops needed help to solve another murder. And they went to prison and got the worst guy. He's so dark and twisted, but he's really smart. And so he plays little games with the FBI person. He's so smart. He can figure out what her, you know, what her fancies are and her fears are just from listening to her talk. He's really, really smart. And he really, really seems to be absolutely
Yeah, he's like everybody's conception of what real evil.
Yeah, the devil would be really smart as God, right? If he's beaten God half the time or more, must be really smart. Yeah. So I thought, wow. I mean, I have to say, this is a great horror movie, even though you know it's really dark subject. Yeah, but you know, for me, it was, you know, it helped my awakening of what we're doing here.
Yep.
So you were able to love that guy and have him be part of the...
Yeah, I saw the game.
Did you have the holy instant?
Yes. I had a miracle, which is a shift in perception. I had forgiveness, which is a release of my constricting thoughts around it. Mm-hmm. And I had a holy instant, which is now breathing easy and actually being at peace. Being at peace in the circumstance. And it was just, because I can see how that relates to the whole world, the whole dream that we're, the whole horror movie of the dream that we've made here.
Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like that. Okay. So let's see. So we've kind of covered now what I wanted to get off this page. So let's go back to tonight's reading. Mm-hmm. 404, paragraph 1, the attraction of guilt. Not found in sin, see, it's found in sin, the idea that separation can be real, not in error. Sin will be repeated because of this attraction. The separation, the enforcement of separation will be repeated because of the attraction of guilt. Guilt becomes a way to feel appropriate.
Like a counterweight.
Yes, a counterweight. You can buy forgiveness from him if you admit your guilt. if you will take on the guilt, he might say, and this is all the ego's definitions, right? And Connie, these words are not the ones you find in the dictionary. They're cleverly redefined. But the world's forgiveness says that if you'll admit guilt, he'll forgive you. And now you can buy the forgiveness by proving to him that you're taking responsibility and you're guilty for what? For hurting him. You hurt him. In the world. In the world, you hurt him. He would like to punish you because you hurt him. And you actually cost him some loss in the world. So, if you'll show some guilt, he might let you off the hook and not punish you.
So is it the flip side of taking responsibility? When you take responsibility, you don't have to feel bad about it.
Yeah, yeah.
But when you feel guilty, you have to feel bad that you did something.
Yeah. How can I know? How can I know you won't do it again? Unless you really show some remorse. For what? For hurting me. So it turns out that he proves that your loss was real. He proves you are a victim. And you want him to admit the guilt. This is the way the world was built for victimhood, so you could not be in love. It eventually works into your private relationships. It makes a personal private hell out of a situation that had the words love sprinkled around the first few months, for sure. Of Course in Miracles says, we got to fix that. This whole forgiveness thing needs to be really turned the other way around. We need to actually look at this from a standpoint of nothing outside of me can actually hurt me. Of Course in Miracles does use forgiveness, but if you've never forgiven somebody else, catch yourself. If you're counseling yourself as a good Course in Miracles student, you're trying to forgive somebody else, you're totally missing the point. The ego's got you. The spiritual ego has got you. Yes, ma'am.
Can I throw a situation at you?
Yeah.
You've met someone, there was history years back, filled your heart, magical, so many layers of connection and beauty, and it's great, and you've come back together again. Mm-hmm. And you're super excited, and mm-hmm. it's that what you just said, the love, those first, you know.
Yes.
And then you find out that there's, you know, a big, there's a deep, serious, private drug problem mm-hmm. in their life.
Mm-hmm.
It's private. They're mm. still type A. Mm. Works as impeccably as you do. Mm-hmm. Functioning, da-da-da. Mm-hmm. Impeccable person. But mm. there's this secret little thing that rears its ugly head.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just ringing so much in everything everyone said tonight. Mm-hmm. And it's just, my brain's working like triple time.
Good.
Mm-hmm. So I just would love for you to speak to that. Like, we're talking about, like, acknowledging and not acknowledging, right? Like,
yes.
I'm summarizing big time, but, you know.
Yes.
Real, not real.
Yes.
Guilt, not, you know.
Yes.
Truth, not true.
Yes.
A body, separation.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's exactly what I was trying to express on what I was going through.
Yeah.
And I'm being aware of it. And I'm actually being open to it in the sense of, you know, being honest about what's going on.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Did I get a free pass? What got me here? The Holy Spirit or the other spirit? I don't know. I'm questioning it all. Because the thing is, what's going on? I'm going through a transition right now that's just that it's beyond this world.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm seeing where I'm at.
Mm-hmm.
And I just got to face it.
So you need to borrow from beyond this world, which is the Holy Spirit, in each moment of that relationship. Whenever you're in question or in doubt of what's really happening here, the only thing that's happening there is Pam.
Uh-huh.
This other person happens to be coming into your circle,
right?
And they're living their deal.
Yeah.
You're going to love it, or you're going to hate it. It's going to be your choice. When somebody swings a 2x4 towards your head, duck.
Right.
And then the 2x4 goes by. They put it down, you don't have to duck anymore. But that's up to you.
Yeah.
You're gonna love it or you're gonna hate it. This is how Pam will live her life every day.
But as you've said to me before, it actually doesn't matter whether you're in or the out of the relationship. It's mm-hmm. just, you're still going to do that whether you're in the relationship or not.
Yes. Yeah, yes.
You see, like,
show up with love or not.
Yes. Yes. Especially, that's right. Very good. Yeah. And so that's why we can always look back on the past and figure out it's never too late to have a nice childhood, even though you're a full adult, because you forgive not what they did on the drug binge, or you forgive your thoughts about it. Mm-hmm. You're not living their life. You're right. Always living your life. Ask yourself, what is this for with every interaction with that person?
Yeah.
And make it personal.
I remember A Course in Miracles instructor once said about addiction that the drink isn't bad. You're just stalling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just don't want to heal today. You're just stalling.
Yeah.
But you don't make it bad or good.
Yes.
And I feel that. I get that.
Yes. Yes.
You know, it's just it's not charged for me.
Mm-hmm. Good.
You know, yes. I fully get that.
Yes. Now, a victim is somebody who's completely in denial
uh-huh.
of A Course in Miracles teaching. Mm-hmm. May you not be a victim. Not to him.
Yeah.
He knows what he does.
Totally.
To you.
See, because I'm waiting.
Right? Let's stop being a victim to ourselves. Right? Can we at least do that? Can we at least agree to stop making our own life difficult?
Right.
Yeah? All right, good.
But sometimes I think we need, because I'm looking at this, I was sharing my story.
Yep.
Hey, Dad, I'm sorry for what I did.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just like what you're trying to say with your mm-hmm. addiction friend or whatever.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hey, I'm sorry, I think I have a problem. Or whatever, you know what I mean? Whatever, mm-hmm. as long as you could, I can meet it halfway.
Mm-hmm.
In a sense of, you know, the relationship that mm-hmm. that's going to give me the feeling of, okay, I can forgive this.
Mm-hmm.
And let me love it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm looking at it from a, you know, this is what's happening to me.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm just saying, I'm looking at it from, you know, just a story that was a sugar-coated version in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? This mm-hmm. prodigal son story.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, wait a minute. Okay, I'll give it a try.
Mm-hmm.
I'll let it go. I won't feel guilty anymore. But, like you said, eventually it's going to come back. And I'm going to go through those, this and that, you know, those whatever, my loving my son and this is my baby, whatever, I'm feeling guilty. But the thing is that if there's not going to be no healing on his part, I'm just going to have to just not feel guilty.
Well,
you see, he shows up for your healing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's, there you go. We're not making him heal. That's not our job.
Exactly. I get that, too, fully.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's like someone once said, if it's hard to love someone, love them from afar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I get that.
Yes.
I get that.
Even in the past.
And then I also understand the special relationship versus the holy relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I fully get that, too. It's mm-hmm. just been so pertinent to tonight's talk.
Yeah.
I just had to throw that story out there.
Yeah.
My brain was about to go.
The other thing you got to always remember that you don't have to support bad behavior.
Yeah. Truly. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm also learning to forgive it.
Yeah. It's like that.
Or be a doormat, right? You know,
right.
Be a doormat.
Yeah. It's discernment. It's not judgment. It's discernment,
yes.
Right?
Yes. The Course in Miracles says you got one job.
Yeah.
You guys know that? The Course in Miracles says you have one job in this body, reading this book for the rest of your life. What is it? Anybody read the book a few times?
Oh,
is that the sound of somebody stealing your car?
No, I thought I saw the picture right there.
Oh my
when you
God,
forgive
you're
yourself.
Driving away.
I thought he was coming in.
It started faster
in
front of him than it did for you. What is your job? What's the one thing you're to do with A Course in Miracles? Like
forgiveness.
And where does forgiveness lead to?
Happiness.
And where does that... It turns out, when you read the book a few times, it says forgiveness, is miracle, is just a means for this thing that it calls the atonement, which is just another word it redefines. At-one-ment. And you do this, the atonement, for yourself. This is the one job you have. And it turns out that if you get your hands around this, took me years. When you get your hands around this, you can... everything falls in place of what you're supposed to be doing. The goal is being set now,
right,
from the start. Because you get this idea that if I was able to allow myself to actually be an extension of God, now, even in this form, I let the part of me still connected to the truth, let that become a little bigger, I'm going to get a little happier and a little freer right now, in the middle of this issue. Like lesson 34 has us do all day long. I could choose peace instead of this. Mm-hmm. That's the lesson. The whole day. Okay, thanks, Pam. Okay, let's jump back a couple of minutes. I just want to finish up this first paragraph. Okay, fear can become so acute that the separation idea is denied the acting out. This is, you know, where you get paralyzed, right? But while the guilt remains attractive, the mind will suffer and not let go of the idea of sin. For guilt still calls to separation to be real. Guilt still calls to it, and the mind hears the idea of separation and yearns for separation, making itself, or guilt, a willing captive to its sick appeal. Because at least I understand guilt. And Jeff, if you can pull it out, get the tears going, and really make them feel how you hurt them. Matt, actually, why don't you tell him how you hurt him more than he even thinks, right? And then he can say, look, it wasn't that bad. Look, tell her to beat yourself up, Jeff. Ooh, we got a little double play going on here. Then you can really get forgiveness. But the guilt's got to be real, see? It's got to be some damage here that you're admitting to. But now you can let your soul rest because you're trying to atone for it. And he gets to say, I'm not going to beat you up. You beat yourself up enough on this. You know, you really screwed me, but I can see how, you know what, you don't need to be punished. I'm going to forgive you for hurting me. And he's going to feel good about that. He did something good in the world. I did something good today. Oh, we are burying, we're just using guilt now as a coin. Trade back and forth, make each other feel better.
Well, guilt. The ego wants to be seen as special. So if the other person admits their guilt to you, then that's saying to the ego, you've won.
Yes, you won something. Yes. Yeah,
your ego is right.
This is a win.
Yeah.
Yeah. You really were a victim. Yeah. You really were. You thought you were for sure, but you weren't quite sure. But now he's proved it. You were unfairly treated. Mm-hmm. You didn't deserve that. Yeah, I didn't. Damn straight, I was a victim. Yeah. Oh my God. Course says that's how you weaken yourself and make yourself actually vulnerable. You're trying to make vulnerable. You're so far from love now, I don't know where to start. Oh my God, right? So that's attraction to guilt. Okay? How twisted, right? Okay, okay, sentence 6. Sin is an idea of evil that cannot be corrected. Well, there it is. There's my quote. How come that's not even highlighted? Jeez.
Jeez.
You know what? It is highlighted, but it's worn out. You know your highlighters get pale after a while? Okay. And yet will forever be forever desirable. As an essential, forever being a reference to time, by the way. Okay. As an essential part of what the ego thinks you are, that is a separate being, suffering you against the world, you against everything, including God, but the ego thinks you are, you will always want guilt and separation as a way to at least navigate these waters. You've got to navigate the danger. At least you understand guilt and forgiveness. Is it time for you to make him guilty? Or is it time for you to be guilty? But either way, if you get it right, you'll both come out happy. If you're a master at this world, you know how to play that. Oh my God. But where's love? Ooh, okay. That's what we're talking about. The unreality of sin. We have to reverse a lot of thinking that makes this world work. Okay, ready? 8. And only, I love this, and only an avenger. Only an avenger with a mind unlike your own could stamp out sin through fear. What the hell would that be? What would be an avenger that could use fear to stamp out separation?
The great payback.
Wow. It's not capitalized, by the way, the word avenger. Did you notice that? Yeah. So it's not the Holy Spirit.
That's the Catholic Church.
Yes. Oh my God. Yes. All right. Okay, we did it. We got through paragraph one. It took us 3 weeks. Okay, so we're really going to bust the ego next week.
Oh boy.
Even more. Yes.
Sign me.
Lay it down. Knock it out. Show it for what it is. Let's have a circle.
Yeah, I just get it.
Take a deep breath. Stop beating yourself up. Stop looking for problems that you're trying to solve, which just makes the problems more real, and get present for a second. Put down those tools you've been sticking yourself with just for an instant. I'm not saying you have to do this for the rest of your life. I'm just saying try it for one instant. Bust yourself. Go into meditation on the way home tonight. Just go still and say, I'm going to release all of these thoughts of judgment, of harm, and of loss that I've been so busy with. I'm just going to let myself be simply, right now, happy for no reason at all. Just for a few seconds. And then go back to your misery all the way home. Fine. But the experience you'll never forget. It's very self-empowering. It shows the power of your mind. That's what we do here. Thank you, thank you. Amen.
Thank you, thank you.
Thank you. Good to see you.
Yes. Starting on
the